Hey, this is Rob Unsbach, and welcome back to another edition of eHeroes for those keeping count. This is episode 397, and my next guest hasn't been on the show since episode 247, 150 episodes ago. And back then we talked about sales tenacity. Welcome, Nicholas Luisi. And today we're going to talk about sales, but on the recruitment side. So welcome, Nicholas, and thanks for being here.
Rob, well, congratulations on 397. I should have waited and I could have been 400th, which, you know, but 397, that's a number that will stick in your mind too. But congrats on this. Listen, this isn't easy. I know this is a labor of love for you, and you bring on really, really smart people, and you do a lot of vetting of the people that you bring on to make sure your audience gets really good advice. And so congrats on that, and congrats on all the new books. We did a little full transparency. We did a little talking about them in the green room, if you will, before that, but you are prolific. I am always amazed every time I get a LinkedIn message from you saying, hey, I got another book. Could you do me a favor and review it for me?
Well, you know,
you are prolific.
I just posted about my wife's book.
Okay.
And it's 25 Days to a Better Marriage. And she actually started writing that book on our 25th wedding anniversary, which was,
I thought you were going to say 26 days ago.
And so she would write a little bit at a time, and it was kind of based on the 25 days before Christmas. And so she had all these thoughts, and so we're working on her grandmother's book, and her grandmother died like 8 years ago, and it was a manuscript that she never got out there. So as we're working on this, my wife's like, I got to work on my own. So we finally got that together, and we're going to launch that next month, but that'll be our 70th book in 13 years.
So how often do you run into people that say, boy, I wish I could write a book? And you're like,
every day. And I said, you know, just write.
And just sit down and write.
They're like, well, I'm horrible with grammar. I'm like, you're looking at the number one person who hated English in high school.
Right.
You know, and the thing is, I think sometimes when you hate something so passionate, that becomes your driving force to be better at it.
Sure. Sure.
So it's with you, and maybe it's me too, but I always hated sales. I really did.
Okay.
I thought, I don't want to learn 101 ways to overcome sales objections. You know, I just wanted to focus on one thing, bringing value to my customer. And so that's what I focused on. But you are this guy that people go to learn sales. And now you're training people and recruiting people and finding that perfect person for these companies. And I think that is fantastic.
Well, thank you for that. And you're very kind, right? And it's interesting. So I do think that there's a couple different levels of people that have like a love affair with love-hate relationship, love affair, trying to figure out with sales. And there are, we talk a little bit about this, right? You know, and I've got like three chapters of a book about, you know, hiring and recruitment that I got to get out there. And you've now inspired me to kind of dig in this weekend and finish it. But, you know, like I'm pretty impressed with the younger generation of salespeople that are out there. Some of them, not all of them, but, you know, I think in every generation, there are good salespeople and bad salespeople, and some people by default kind of find their way into sales, and they didn't maybe think that they wanted to do it, but when they got into it and they realized the process and the system and became really good tacticianers of processes and systems and sales, they then liked it and became really good at it and like all the benefits that it provides for them. But I think it's the old analogy that has gone on since the first person knocked on the door, you know, in the tribal times and tried to sell somebody something. It's, you know, either you're really good at it or you're really, really bad at it, and either you love it or you hate it. And, you know, and if I think about it in the totality, it is the one position that has the highest turnover, right? Bar none, it's the highest turnover. It has got the highest failure rate. And I think, you know, we have to kind of get our get into it and say, why is that, right? And that's kind of why we started a recruitment arm. It's called yoursalesrecruiter.com. You know, we kind of did it. We were just kind of recruiting for our clients, but then we got people that came to us and said, hey, listen, I just want you to recruit for me. So we kind of grew this arm of recruitment and really have spent a lot of time thinking about what are the right DNA for salespeople. How do we set them up for success versus failure? How do we make sure that, you know, that the system is working? And listen, you and I, you know, I've been in sales, and you know, you get the first sales job where they kind of pointed you to a cubicle and said, I'm aging myself, right? There's the phone. And you know, people may not know what that was, but it was a dial phone. And you know, we didn't even have CRMs back then. It was, you know, figure out how to build your list. And we went out and bought manufacturer's guides and we're on index cards. And you know, salespeople today would die if you said you had to write something on an index card. But you know, I've been in it for a long time, and I've kind of seen, you know, the pluses and minuses of it. And so, you know, it's a fun way to give back, right? I think, yeah, you could work with clients and get their sales up, and that's rewarding. And you do that so well on the marketing side and creating the processes and the funnel and everything. But there's something about getting that person their job and then watching them become successful. And there is an intrinsicness to that. Like I said, a recruit that got a job and is doing well, you know, sent me just such a lovely note the other day. And clients kind of expect that. That's why they're paying you, right? Some will be very gracious with their praise, but for the most part, it's like, hey, I'm paying you, so get the results. But when you get some,
you have this innate ability, though, because, you know, ever since I've known you, and I've run into you at events, GKIC sure. events, and you know, you got the marketing background, you got the sales background, you got the recruitment background, you know, you kind of got this whole picture. People look at you, go, wow, you know, he's got it all together. You know, you can't fail. Yeah. You know, and you know, you're just, you know, all these people, but it took time to get to this place.
Sure. And I think first off, you're very kind and lavish with that praise, and I appreciate it. You're always a gentleman beyond. I think there's something that you got to learn along the way. And, you know, we were just talking about an equal mentor to both of us, Dan Kennedy. I think he was great at making sure that he kept in front of people all the time and writing notes or sending them ideas and that. And, you know, he had that model of one business development thing every day, right, to kind of fill that funnel. And, you know, I got, you know, even some of, let's call it more traditional, like Harvey McKay, you know, I kind of got into him really young and, you know, kind of building that Rolodex and, you know, kind of capturing people. And I don't do a good enough job of keeping in touch with people. I think it's a little easier today on social media than it was back in the old days where you had to pick up the phone and call people or write them a note or send them a postcard. But, you know, if you think about it, it's got to be a process and a system of keeping in touch with people. And we see that on the recruitment side of just finding really good candidates. And maybe it's not the right fit at that time with one or two or three of your recruits that you have, but you know that you want to keep in touch with them. So just nurturing them. So we put a lot of marketing processes and systems in place. Not as well as we should, right? We probably need to get, you know, 30 minutes of your time to figure that out. But, you know, kind of building funnels and moving that through. And I think, you know, I started out doing this because I was getting a recruitment call from a person in HR. Wonderful person. And she was crying for a salesperson. And I was a reference check. And she was asking all the right HR questions, but none of the right sales questions, right? And none of the right sales leadership question. And she was just, you could tell she was going through a checklist, and I kind of stopped her. And I said, wait a second, here's the things you should be asking when you're doing a reference check or recruiting for a salesperson. And I'm like, you know, okay, well, the old analogy from a Western is a gun knows a gun, right? You know, a salesperson or a sales leader knows another salesperson or sales leader. Marketer knows a marketer, right? They speak a language. There's a kinship. You kind of just figure it out of saying, this person knows what he's talking about. Just like if you spend 10 minutes with you, Rob, you'd say, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. And so that's kind of what we are, right? So all of our recruiters are our salespeople, ex-salespeople that kind of, you know, have done been successful in that and will want to give back, and they want to give back to the careers that have done well for them. And you know, we in nowadays, you know, our team, we have a lot of sourcers. The sourcers are in the Philippines. They do phenomenal work, but they've all also been on the phones too, right? So they kind of know that initialness. So
yeah, what I've been finding though is going back to the 90s, the marketing that we used to use, the thank you cards, the newsletters, the things that drive marketing through the mail are actually working again because people are tired of the noise of social media and they're tired of, you know, jumping on YouTube to try to find what they want. Now, you know, you send them a newsletter in the mail and they're actually looking at it because they don't get as much mail as they used to.
Yeah.
You know,
you're so right. I mean, we're direct mail, I don't want to say junkies, but we're direct mail acolytes, right? We like it. I think it does so well for certain things. Certain generations, I think, respond better to it. I do read everything I read. The younger generation is responding to it. You know, I was just over at my mom and dad's the other day, and they're like, oh, yeah, we got, you know, coupon. We got to use, you know. So there is that direct mail still works for all different things, and there's not any noise. I mean, you and I are going to be on this podcast for 45 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, right? And it won't be enough because, you know, I love talking to you and I learned from you. But when we finish up, we'll probably each have about 20 junk emails in our inbox, right? We're going to have about 3 to 4 LinkedIn messages, which are noise, right? Because the AI slop that people are just throwing out there. There's going to be probably some Facebook DMs that noise. And so just the overstimulation where we have to kind of shut things off. And there's that quietness of spending time with direct mail, right? That there is that reading that you do of if it's a new, newsletters, I get excited, you know, mutual friends and they're all acolytes of Dan. Have, you know, Ben Glass has got a phenomenal newsletter. I love reading that. Vance Morris's newsletter. You know, there's so many good people with some really good stuff out there that it's just fun to read. And, you know, you just, I think too, I don't know about you, I just get tired, right? Just get tired of social media and just the, you know, everybody, you know, it's the Lake Wobegon effect. Everybody's the smartest. Everybody's the best. Everybody's, you know, kids are above average, you know, if I could quote Garrison Keillor, but you know, it's just exhausting. And you know, I like certain platforms because it allows you to keep in touch with family and watch people that you have affinities, you know, that you know, and you watch them post things about their kids or talk about their grandkids like you and I were talking about in the beginning. You know, that's the fun part of social media, but the noise is that everybody, you know, every sales pro in the world who sold for 60 days is now a sales coach, right? And they're all, you know, but they all, none of them could quote Zig Ziglar, you know, so it's all, you know, it's all about that.
And lately, and I'm going to use this as an example. I'm not going to use someone's name, but I got this LinkedIn message this morning and it goes, would it be a waste of time to compare your current financial planning approach with ours and seeing where we may be able to add value? And I'm thinking, from a marketing perspective, that approach is awful.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And so I replied, would it be a waste of time? Maybe add to the value. And they were both questions. Your approach screams uncertainty and lacks confidence. So I get back. Hi, Rob. Your response is crass and condescending. And so he unfriended me. And I'm thinking, you know, I get this, and I like to call these things LinkedIn losers because they don't understand marketing. Yeah. They don't understand behavior. And this person's in the financial planning field. I get it. Most of those aren't marketers. But if they just picked up one Dan Kennedy book on marketing, they would know that that approach is awful.
Yep. Yep. And even, you know, just listen, just pick up Ogilvy. You know what I mean? If Dan isn't your cup of tea and he's not for everybody, but he, you know, certainly is for us and he should be for everybody, pick up David Ogilvy, right? Or pick up Jay Abraham or, you know, or Trout and Rice. You know, just kind of school yourself in that from a positioning standpoint and that. And I think it goes back to kind of what we started talking about, right? It's, you really do have to start where, I joke, I'm like, our recruitment really is nothing more than direct response marketing, right? Mm-hmm. We write a very, 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 very poignant ad, right, that is meant to attract the right people and repel the wrong people, right? And we just put people through a process and system, and you know, do and you add some other stuff to it, whether it's, you know, psychological lead testing and things of that nature. But, you know, really good, you know, it's math. And human development or human behavior, right? Same thing as marketing, right? Dan preaches it all the time. It's math and human development and human behavior. And just kind of understanding that. And that's the same thing with recruitment, but it's also the same thing with sales. But yeah, and I'm sure for you as a professional marketer, the amount of noise that's out there is just unbelievable. And the amount of really bad advice, as you said, you know, they should just pick up
and as a marketer, we also tend to contribute to the noise. I'm sorry, yeah. But we do. And I use an auto scheduler for a lot of my social stuff because I'm not always in front of the computer, but I have it planned out. And I look through some of it, and there's over 1,500 pieces of content that gets put out. You know,
yeah.
It's in the repository of this program. And I went through a lot of it. I'm like, noise, 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 get rid of it, get rid of it. It's not relevant anymore. You know, I want to be able to tell people more about what we do and how we help and why they should trust us. But I'm looking through this and going, okay, no. It's like, all it is noise.
Well, good for you for doing that. Right. But good for you for not saying, hey, listen, I don't want to be part of it anymore. Mm-hmm. I do agree with you. Right. One of my favorite Seth Godin books is, you know, marketers ruin everything. Right. You know, it's just, you know, how we kind of rush to everything and ruin it and oversaturate it. And, you know, we could go. But I don't want to. But
you know,
yeah.
Even people say to me, well, Rob, 70 books. When are you going to stop?
Why?
I love putting out content. I really do. Some of it is great. You know, I love producing books because it contributes to the legacy of who I am. You know, maybe not all the books are going to make me money, but sometimes that's not the point. The point is that I have this idea that I want to put it out there. Whether it makes me money or not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, I love what I do.
Wow.
And I think that's the... Some of these marketers out there, they're like, well, we have to have an ROI on everything. They don't.
I think, you know, so some of your books, I would say, even if they don't make you a dime, are really check the column of human, adding to the human experience, right, if you will, right? You talk about the Disney one, certainly check the box of let's add to the human experience of business owners embracing a, you know, I got a picture of Walt over my, you may not be able to see it, but it's over my shoulder there. And just, you know, that, you know, think about a breakthrough entrepreneur, right? It probably doesn't get talked about enough, right, by just these generations. So it's our job who kind of experienced it and watched them grow and are students of it to kind of continue to dialogue about that. Because, you know, as every entrepreneurial organization, now that it's, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 different CEOs in, it's going to get diminished. They're still excellent, you know, at what they do. And I think, you know, their latest ad of the cruise ship is second to none that I see. But even the work you talk about, you know, helping people that may be in a debt situation or IRS situation or HOA situation. And just like you said, each book has form letters. And you think about somebody that's under that duress, right? You know, maybe they had a medical emergency or experience that caused them to have so much debt, right? That they, you know, they're good people trying to figure it out. And if they get a hold of your book, and it helps them get some breathing room, right? Just take a little bit of that constant pressure, you know, that is there. That's checking the box of the I'm adding to the human experience, so to speak. And, you know, and we could all do a better job of that, I think, you know, of how do we make this world a little bit better place once we leave it. And your books will have an outstanding legacy for that. So that's, you know, thank you for those.
And, well, let's talk. Well, we touched on Disney and you know, Disney is probably one of my favorite companies, especially Walt Disney World, to visit. But, you know, they just laid off 1,000 employees. And they're saying, well, the consolidating departments, they're utilizing AI, they're doing all these things. So how does your company, what you do, you know, benefit people who are looking for a job that have just been displaced by AI?
Well, so we talked a little bit about that, right? I think we only focus on sales, right? So we do sales leaders and sales people, if you will, or sales managers, right? So that space is what we do in. And there's a lot of noise. We talk a little bit about that, Rob, before we got on, right? Of AI is going to solve all of your problems. And, you know, it's much like, you know, the AI, all the AI SDRs, right, or AI account executives, or all that, and you'll get 50,000 book meetings, but they all have phone rooms and sales floors of a couple hundred people selling their products, right? So, you know, obviously AI can't sell AI, so therefore, how is AI going to sell my product? And so I think you have to, it's here. Right. And so you have to become a student of it. You really have to say, how am I going to make this? I'm going to be the master. This is going to be my work. Or how am I going to make AI work smarter for me, work better for me, and really help me? I think what it could do from a call planning perspective for a salesperson is phenomenal. We use AI to find recruits for us. It's phenomenal, right? What I would have had to pay, even if I was paying overseas talent to source resumes and to source LinkedIn, would be, you know, it's a click of the button with AI, and it could go through, and you have to teach it, but it could go through and find the critical, you know, 20 to 30 resumes that you want to talk to these people. So I use AI every day, right? And I think every salesperson should be using AI every day and then some. I have some clients that are very good adopters of it. I'm very, very impressed, you know, with what they do from a, you know, let's go find lists, let's go find people, let's go find trigger events, let's go find all of those things that we have in the sales process. So to answer your question, In the sales recruitment space that I'm in, we use it to source resumes, bar none. We use it to find trigger points for potential clients so we could have conversations with them, bar none, right? So it's working for us. We use it for punching up, and we're both joking. I may be a good copywriter, but I'm a horrible grammatician, right? So, right, kind of cleaning up my grammar, if you will. So it just makes sense. We use Claude for that, bar none. It's excellent, right? But we give it, we don't just say, type me something. Here it is, make it better for me. So we use it. I see salespeople, we talk to salespeople. How do you use AI, right? That's now a critical conversation for us. If they don't know how to use it, or they're not using it for their prospecting, for their trigger events, for making their presentations better, for making their emails better, for all the ancillary things, then they're going to be a salesperson of the past, right? So your bigger question was, what's going on in the marketplace? I think there was probably some over hiring, if you will. And we're using AI to be the excuse because Wall Street is accepting that, and the human, you know, the stockholders accept that. And so we're using it to really kind of neutralize. I do think, you know, AI does all, you know, we may have had pre-SDRs do a lot of the prospecting for us, right? Go out there and find me lists, and then the SDRs call the list. We don't need that employee anymore. And that could have been overseas talent that we are getting rid of, and because AI could really generate certain things. So I do think there's going to be some entry-level work that's going to not be done by humans. It's going to be done by artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I always say, and I'm sure you appreciate this, Rob, is the second half of that word is intelligence. And we still need humans to apply our intelligence and apply our thinking and our decision-making process through the data that we get, the output that we get. Does it make sense? And we were joking, and you were kind of just saying, hey, I got this in my LinkedIn box. That's just somebody that really put some AI, probably what we refer to as AI slop, right, or AI noise, into LinkedIn and just start sending messages out versus thinking through critically, or going to get a Dan Kennedy book or a copywriting book or a Robert Reeves book or something of that nature and saying, does this make sense? Am I entering the conversation that is going on in my prospect's mind, right? What are they thinking about? And does this headline stop them to give them 30 more seconds to keep reading, to get 30 more seconds to keep reading, to get 30 more seconds to keep reading? So, long answer to a short question. I think that companies will be laying off, or some of those entry-level positions that we all got when we finished college or just started out in our careers won't be there because AI will do that. But I do think it'll be interesting, and much like the re-engineering of the 90s, where we got rid of a bunch of people, then we realized we needed those people, we have to bring them back. So, you know, it's painful right now. It's tragic for the people that lost their jobs. I don't take that jokingly. I mean, it's very, very serious. You know, our ability to provide for our families and kind of get our own self-worth is who our jobs provide for us. But it'll be interesting to see 3 years from now, 2 years from now, what happens.
Well, you know, I think it's also the times. I mean, back in the 90s, I went through a string of jobs before I became an entrepreneur. I worked for Coke. I worked for, you know, a bunch of companies that no longer exist. And I would get laid off because I was the lowest guy in the totem pole. But it taught me that I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be in this cycle of being laid off. And that's when I created my carpet cleaning business, which lasted 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and then from that, I started this agency in 2001. So we just celebrated 25 years.
Amen. God bless.
And I sold the cleaning business back in 2014, and the person who took it over tanked it within 6 months because he didn't want to do the marketing. He didn't want to charge the pricing I was charging.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, he perpetuated the cycle. He basically, you know, laid himself off, which was stupid. But
yeah,
you know.
It will be interesting to see, like, so we both are students of the information marketing business, info business, right? And your listeners, you know, it'll be interesting to see what AI does to that space, right? I am curious as to, you know, YouTube kind of killed that, you know, so how do people add value when almost everything is out there in the public domain? It will be interesting to see how that space kind of continues to flourish, if it does, and what does that look like?
Yeah, you know, and I hadn't made videos in a long time, you know, and I started about a year ago just saying, I'm going to make a video a day or two videos a day.
Good for you.
Videos.
Yeah.
And I'd pop them out there. And I've gotten more jobs from that because people see my face consistently. They listen to the message.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's contributed to more sales of the books. But
that's great.
It takes just a few short minutes every day. You know, pick up your phone, record something, throw it out there. Be deliberate, but be consistent. And I think it's changing the way things work. I've had people that are 30 years younger than me, you know, call me up and say, Rob, I need your help. You know, I got this struggling business. Can you help? Okay, well, you're a lot younger than me. I have kids that are the same age and they're just resistant to the marketing. They just want everything on YouTube. They want everything on TikTok. And there's going to be a shift. There's going to be an information shift where the younger people start to say, I need more. I need substance, you know, and so they're going to go back to books. They're going to start reading more, and they're going to learn about direct response marketing because I don't think the younger kids today know anything about it.
You know, it's not just, so I think I agree with that. But I think it's a step up, right? And I think it's the positioning, right? It's the strategy. Then you get to the tactical thing of as a direct response. And then, you know, then what is direct response ad and how do you formulate a direct response strategy? And now then what is the media? We're all rush, and it's been since day one, right? Everybody's rushing to the media versus saying, you know, how do I position myself vis-a-vis my competition or vis-a-vis nobody, right? And how do I, and how do I articulate then, how do I build a value proposition, if you will, so I can charge a higher price, a higher premium, has my, you know, as other people out there in the carpet cleaning business, right, or in the whatever, you know, junk removal business, whatever you're in there. And sure, there's always going to be the people that are the I'm trying to get it for the cheapest price possible. They're doesn't make them, you know, bad people, just makes them bad prospects for you if you want to charge at a premium price. But if I think about, you know, just like the space that you came from, right, which is the carpet cleaning business, then I moved into the marketing, and then now I'm, you know, kind of a marketing shop. But it's really the how do I help position you so your messaging breaks through that clutter and really you are positioned as a, you know, as a platform of one versus a platform of many. And I think, you know, you understand that some of it could be from the school of hard knocks, right? Or just getting your teeth kicked in with writing copy that didn't respond. And now I have to step back and try to dissect this and say, okay, what's going on with that? So, you know, that we have to go back to educating marketers, right? And really having a good understanding of it. Much like we have to educate salespeople for them to have a really good understanding and foundation of here's what we need to do, because everybody thinks the tools and AI as a tool is the strategy. It's not. It's just the methodology to get us to where we need to go.
You know, you look back in time and people complained about the printing press.
Sure.
Or the fax machine, the mimeograph machine, whatever it was.
Or phones, and, right? Yeah. You
know, even our cell phones, people, oh my God, it's going to ruin everything. You know, like you said, it's a tool. You have to master the tool. And, you know, my father-in-law was a self-employed carpenter, and he was old school. Every hand crank tool, he didn't like power stuff. And I'm like, you know, if you just use this power, you could increase your time. You could do more stuff. You could charge more. Oh, I don't want to do that. Just hand crank. God, hours later, it's the hand crank. You know, it's like, yeah, there are old school people that will do all that. But, you know, even in my past cleaning business, I could have gone into homes with a bucket and a scrub brush and people wouldn't have cared. They just wanted clean carpet.
Sure.
And I got this truck-mounted machine that could suck the carpet out, and it just increases my time. Now I can clean more homes, make more money.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, right? It's the tool. I do think the one tool that is a detriment to society is the cell phone, but that's just me, right? I was downtown last week for jury duty, of all things, and I literally saw four people each day walking from the train to the courthouse that either walked into me or were about to walk into me because they were on their phones, or, you know, on the flip side, walking into traffic. So I do think that, you know, that we're just a little too attached to them. But I agree, right? It's the tools, and how do you master the tools and implement the tools and execute the tools so that you really are, you know, allowing yourself to be faster, be better, be more nimble, maybe get more production out of your staff, out of your team, whether that's a sales team or a team of copywriters or a team of marketing research people or a team of carpet cleaners, right? You know, it's just, how do I get more out, right? So if you think about Henry Ford, right, he his greatest, you know, certainly the Model T, but it was the manufacturing line that he created, right? So how do I maximize the production so I could get, one, drive the cost down, but get things done throughput-wise? And I think in everything, in every business, there's a constraint, right? There's a constraint of whether it's talent, whether it's people, whether it's tools, And you, as a business owner or an entrepreneur or a marketer or a salesperson, have to kind of find a constraint, whether the constraint is on your prospects and they can't get things done or can't say yes to your offer because there's some level of constraint, or if it's through your own processes and systems in your business, you have to find the constraint. And I think, you know, the tools are there, but sometimes the tools just magnify or multiply the problems. And so you got to have really good systems, really good processing, as you talked about, you know, really good direct response marketing and advertising.
Well, I think that we can have all the processes in the world. I mean, we can funnel our systems to death, but without a salesperson,
sure,
you don't have anything. I've noticed a lot of companies, oh, wow, we funneled this, we did this, we did this. Okay, great. Who's answering your phones? Who's answering questions?
Yeah.
Who's selling your product? Oh, we got rid of that because we have all these funnels.
Yep. Yep.
Doesn't make sense.
It does not. And it does seem scary, right? Because we think about it just from a basic, and we talked about Disney, just from a basic customer service perspective, right? One of our clients, and I said, this is really one of your biggest, they're in a very highly competitive marketplace. I won't say the marketplace, but it's very, very competitive. But one of the things they do is they have team members, US-based team members that answer their chat and answer their phone, which is light years of more advanced than any of their competition. I'm like, that's your secret sauce, right? Because we've all had that frustration level and we joke about it, but when we yell operator, operator, operator into the phone louder and louder and louder, but trying to deal with having that taken care of or just getting into that chat loop with AI that's giving you the same response over and over and over again, and you're just trying to figure out, how do I update my credit card so I don't, you know, so I can continue to get the and so there is that, right? And I do agree that people, we want to cut salespeople out of it. And I understand why, because of the fact that salespeople are sometimes a pain in the ass, right? And they don't show up, and sometimes they don't do what you want them to do. And if I could get a bot to do it, then it's going to be done right all the time. But I agree that we don't have enough throughput to think through what's the return on investment of this person, and how, one is, can I use tools to make them more, you know, have a higher return on the investment ROI, but really, how do I maximize that? And then how does that become my secret sauce or my value proposition to the marketplace? So yeah, I agree with you, Rob. Yeah, it's, you know, has everything, you're spot on. Yeah, it's just, it's always a pleasure.
You know, so where do people go to find you?
A number of different places, right? So they could go to yoursalesrecruiter.com if they want to talk to us about it on the sales side. They go to Sales Performance Team, which is our core business on the sales management, sales leadership, sales thought leadership side. I'm on LinkedIn, so they could hit me up on LinkedIn, Facebook. They could email me, nick@salesperformanceteam.com. Those are all the good places to get me. Certainly the other socials, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, if that's their cup of tea. Sometimes there is a VA that answers those messages. So please, you know, if you get a message that, that's off, just know that. They could hit us up anyway.
Well, I want to leave everyone with a final thought, because in the back of Nick's office, there's a little sign that says believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I want everyone to believe in themselves. You know, yeah, you may not be the strongest sales performer or marketer or writer, but you know what? If I can do it, Nick can do it, you can do it. You got to believe. So thanks, Nick, for being here. And we'll see everyone on the next episode. Adios.